up, everyone? Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. This is Spin Rate, the Athletics Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we are here on what has actually turned out to be quite a busy day in Blue Jays land. If you don't know, we do two episodes a week now of Spin Rate. This one here comes during the week, and on the weekend, Sunday night, which you will see on Monday morning, is when Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic and I talk about your Toronto Blue Jays. Caitlin is the co-host of Spin Rate. So if you haven't been listening, I think you should do that. And if you want to do that, you want to subscribe to Spin Rate wherever it is you get your podcast. If it's Apple Podcast or Spotify, subscribe to The Athletic. Sorry, subscribe to the podcast. And then you can subscribe to The Athletic as well to read everything that Caitlin writes, read everything that Ken Rosenthal wrote about injuries. You can read everything that Keith Law writes about the minor leagues, about prospects, about the draft, everything you want. You want to read Blake Murphy, my guy, read him about the Raptors. Hockey's still happening unbelievably somehow. Read whoever it is that writes about hockey, James Myrtle, the whole squad. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic, you need to go to theathletic.com/spinrate, which is the name of this show. If you go there and you subscribe, if you haven't yet, you go and you re-up, let them know that we sent you. It's great. Keeps us in podcasting dollars and microphones and producers. Shout out to Cam, who's listening. Producing silently away in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. But this week on Spin Rate, I'm excited to talk to Craig Goldstein. He is the editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. And we had a really, 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 really interesting chat. I had a lot of fun. Other fun stuff that's happening in Blue Jays land. June 1st, Blue Jays will be in Buffalo, New York at Salem Field. They'll be eating Mighty Taco. And they'll be playing baseball there for who knows how long. There's a lot of vaccine coming to Ontario, coming to hotspots and the rest of the country. There's going to be a lot of people getting vaccinated sooner rather than later. What does that mean? Maybe the Blue Jays will be back for August long weekend, August 1st, September 1st. Who knows? The Blue Jays have said they still intend to make it to Toronto this year. Hopefully they can get in there. Hopefully you, I, anybody can get out to a ball game as well. How great would that be? So fingers crossed. Again, if you have the opportunity, if you are eligible, I know there's a lot of different places around the province of Ontario that have opened up eligibility to all kinds of new people, especially if you live in a hotspot. Get on the internet. Get on the phone. Let a friend know. If there's someone else that you might know in your neighborhood, in your life that needs a bit of a hand, help them book. Get your health care, get your postal code. Off you go. Maybe the end result is we're going to watch live baseball. Watch your Toronto Blue Jays. If you're watching your Toronto Blue Jays this week, they are on the West Coast. You will not see George Springer. The Blue Jays' $150 million man was placed on the injured list here today, this evening, on Wednesday, at the time that I'm recording this. Really sucks. You know, George Springer kind of looked a little rough on the weekend, came out of a game, I believe, Sunday early, didn't play Monday, didn't play Tuesday, now back on the injured list. So 10-day injured list stint, hopefully. The quad, I assume that's what it is. It's just, happened in like the last few minutes. Hopefully it has the time to mend and he can get right again and rejoin the Blue Jays at full strength, not just as a DH who drags his carcass around the bases after hitting monstrous home runs, which not the worst thing. There are a lot of guys making a lot of money to do that in the big leagues right now. But the Blue Jays signed George Springer to be effectively the best player in their team. That is a big task to be the best player in the Blue Jays right now, unless your name is Vladimir Guerrero Jr., because, boy, Vladdy just keeps hitting. The Blue Jays, he, like almost everybody else on the team, was stymied on Tuesday night, but three more hits on Monday, just having an amazing start. And Craig Goldstein and I talked about that. We talked about, you know, early season stuff. We talked about signal versus noise, sample size, you know, stabilization, actuality, whatever you want to talk about it. But it was a great talk. So why don't you wait 1 or 2 seconds, and then I will talk to Craig Goldstein on this edition of Spin Rate. Okay, as promised, it is my pleasure at this time to be joined by the editor of Baseball Prospectus, editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus, one of the hosts of the Five and Dive podcast, Craig Goldstein. Craig, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
It's a pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited. I'm excited to do this. We've actually never done this.
Yeah.
In all the many years.
this is the first time. I mean, we've talked online, but the first time seeing your beautiful face, hearing your dulcet tones.
Looking a little rough, a little ragged. I am. You look like a million bucks. I'm looking a little rough and a little ragged. I was very honored last year. You invited me to write the Blue Jays essay for the Baseball Prospectus Annual, which was a tremendous thrill. So thank you for that.
One of my favorites. Honestly, when people asked this year, kind of like, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? How do you want to go about it? The two that I always pointed to, one was Clarissa Young's Oakland A's essay. It was about the architecture of the Coliseum, but about the team and about the place. It was really good. And then yours being about the migration pattern of butterflies and the moment the butterfly landed on, I'm blanking on his name, but on the pitcher's glove. And like, it's, I mean, so for anyone listening, the prompt that we tend to tell people is don't say something about the team, use the team to say something. And like, I thought those two were really just great versions of that sentiment come to fruition. So it was absolutely my pleasure. And I couldn't have been happier, number one, with the result. And like I said, one of my favorite essays in that book.
That's awesome. Thank you for saying so. I appreciate that. Also, of course, want to remind everybody before we get started to go check out the 2021 Baseball Prospectus That's Annual. Right. I'm blanking on the name of the person who wrote the Blue Jays essay this year, but it was a great talk about Black Lives Matter and about the social justice movement as well. It's a great essay too. So
yeah,
if you haven't checked out this year's annual, sorry?
Camilla Hinkson, I believe one of the editors at The Athletic now. So,
and she just, I knew that.
Just signed course. Up. it just happened in the last week, I believe.
That makes more sense. That makes a lot more sense. But yeah, shout out. It's a great great essay. Check out the annual if you don't already. If you could see over Craig's shoulder here, there's a variety. He's running quite the infomercial here on Zoom. But let us talk about the early days here of 2021. And I know there's something that you were, I believe I used the word banging on about, which is we're going to talk about kind of truth and fiction here in the early days of the season. So, you know, what's happened has happened. We cannot take away the many different times that, say, Randall Grichuk has reached base. But it's important, I think, and maybe this is something that we can talk about a little bit, is just – where do we start to draw the lines in terms of like, is this real? Is this mirage? When it comes to these early season results, I mean, we're getting into May now. What are the things that maybe are the key indicators for you or just the, is it more just like a mindset of let's kind of wait and see before this guy with, you know, 3,000 career plate appearances in the big leagues suddenly looks like a different person?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's always one of the more interesting questions and one that people have obviously grappled with very quickly. They like to look for when certain stats stabilize. And, you know, being at Baseball Prospectus, Russell Carlson wrote one of the most cited articles throughout the sabermetric corner of the internet in terms of when certain stats stabilize. But he also wrote one, I think, that got less play that was stop using stabilize like that because you're using it wrong. There's an article on there. It's worth reading. But what we mean by stabilize in that sense does not mean this guy is officially changed in regards to the way he's performing and what this metric indicates. What it means is that number is now believable in terms of what happened in the past. It's a reliable, I like to say reliable more than stabilized, right? But it's a reliable number that we can now use going forward. That doesn't mean you project it forward, right? But you can say like, yeah, that is outside the range of variance, right? Or we can trust to a fairly, you know, decent degree that it is outside the range of variance. But I remember I've been harping on about this for years. I mean, you said banging on, which is a nice way to say like griping or whining or complaining, whinging, whatever you want to call it, right? Like it is all those things. And that's what I've been doing more than anything. I remember years and years ago when I was just starting out writing, I was writing for fake teams at SB Nation about Nate McLouth. And he had this like, it was like a year and a half where he was like a good player. It was in Baltimore. And then I think like half a year in Pittsburgh that he was actually pretty good. But he had been Nate McLouth for like six seasons. I don't know how many thousands of at-bats or plate appearances or whatever. And the question was like, the question we all want to answer is like, is this sustainable? But I'm trying to evolve my point because of how players have changed more recently, you know, the swing playing stuff. So what indicators do we have versus what's real or what's not? But like, I just think it's so valuable to remember that so much can happen in the first month of a season that is a deviation or more beyond what a player has shown themselves to be. And I am, for better or worse, pretty slow about changing my opinion about guys. And I tend to go back to our priors, which is, again, when it's thousands of at-bats, when it's less, you know, you kind of modulate up or down based on what the player's been over their career.
For me, I think it's important to think about what are the inputs that we're looking at. So if I'll use Randall Grichuk as an example, where if we say, oh, Randall Grichuk is hitting 280, and he's got like a 120, whatever, like weighted runs created plus or metric of choice. Like he's punching, you know, this is a guy who's been at or close to league average for almost his whole career. Now he's much better than that. But is anything fundamentally different about him? And then you say, oh, well, he's also reduced his strikeout rate significantly, or he's hitting the ball to right field more than we ever saw him before as a dead pull guy. So I think those are those things when I'm saying like, is this a new guy or is this just like a slightly inflated version of the one we saw before? An example I use is, you know, if you and I were sitting here talking about this, but it was instead of being 2021, it was 2010 or 11, and it was May the 5th when we're recording this, and we're talking about Jose Bautista. Like, right. Is this real? He hit whatever, like a dozen damn home runs in April or something like that. Right. And into 2011, obviously that was the year he got off to a crazy start, but you can see by the way that he's drawing walks and the way that he was not swinging and missing and the way that he was commanding the strike zone. You're like, this is a different guy. He's the exception to the rule. I mean, this was a guy who's 30 years old who had a breakout. You don't bank on guys doing that, but I think it's important. If we're going to say this is a new version of this player, consider more than a couple. Oh, he's got two wins in a month and a half, or he's got a 120 weighted runs created plus. Just try to use as many inputs as we can to adjust that opinion.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And it's to me where it's really valuable. Obviously, we're a statistics oriented site, but a lot of the stuff that if you want to catch guys early or earlier than other people, you need the contextual information that beat reporters and other people bring to the table, right? Like, it's one thing to say like, okay, over 3 weeks of data that we have, maybe it's Jose Bautista, is pulling the ball more than he ever has in his life. He's also putting the ball in the air more than he ever has in his life. The question is, he doing it on purpose? Was that a mechanical change that he implemented, or was it noise? I mean, because that can happen. Mm-hmm. Guys can get in a rut. They can do, or, you know, obviously if they're hitting home runs, it's a positive thing. But, you know, Chris Shelton hit 13 home runs in April one year. Guys go on streaks. The question is, was it intentional, and are they going to be able to continue that executing that intention? Because the league will respond, right? Like, guys will start throwing. And as far as I've seen thus far, the only guy who does it year in, year out that no one can figure out is Mike Trout, right? Everything he does, he's changed how he's approached. I remember the Jeff Sullivan piece on Fangraphs. This is his weak spot, and he's not that bad up and in, and all of a sudden he's a tremendous up and in hitter. But like, the league will respond the second time through. That's things that you have to watch for. And as much as we want to be early on guys and the first to identify a potential change, a lot of it to me is always premised on if he can keep doing this. And that's about what I mean about like the league, the league responding to a change a guy's made, because maybe they are trying to get out front, catch the ball early, get it in the air. That's the Justin Turner, the Marlon Byrd, the Jose Bautista change. But some guys will do that and create a hole in their swing, and pitchers are going to be able to exploit it the next time around. And that doesn't mean it wasn't for real when it happened. It doesn't mean the first month wasn't reliable in what we got out of it, but it does mean it's not as simple to project forward. And so we just have to, it's as frustrating as it is, like, we really just have to wait and see to some degree.
I think that that's a good point as well about the almost the quality of the signal. And that sort of brings me when I'm thinking about a player like Kevin Biggio.
Yeah.
Right. So Kevin Biggio is a very divisive figure among Blue Jays fans because there are those who love his versatility. They are quick to accurately point out, like, look at what he's done. He was 162 games into his career, and this he was a well above average player. You know, played a lot of different positions, drew a ton of walks, you know, hit a decent amount of home runs even in 2020. But when I think about the quality of the signal, I mean, we've got a 2019 season that was really up and down. And then you've got 2020, which is, I don't know if anybody knows what to make of it. And now here we are early in 2021, where the walks are still there, but they're not, they're down. And then everything else is also like looking pretty rough. I mean, when it comes to quality of signal and maybe the kind of consecutive trips through the league, do you think that there's a lot of value in that? Or maybe another way to think about it is while we're reluctant to recognize a guy as being brand new and being changed, when someone starts to maybe play worse or play to our preconceived notions of what their true talent level is, should we take the same kind of pump the brakes approach?
Yeah, we should. And I'm someone who's been a big Kevin Biggio doubter. I've had a lot of discussions with Zach Kreiser, who is now at Yahoo Sports, but was at Baseball Prospectus for a while because he always liked Biggio. And it's not that I think he's a bad player. I don't think he's this bad. But I felt that the approach, as good as the walks were, bordered on passive. So, it was, you know, he's very much like a three true outcomes player. In a lot of respects, but then I look and he's slugging 429 and 432 in 2019 and 2020. And while the home runs are there, I'm kind of sitting here thinking like, well, okay, how do you end up as a three true outcomes player slugging 430? That's a tough way to make a living. And the walks were there, but I kept thinking to myself, okay, if I'm a pitcher and I was armed with this information, I'd attack. It's great. He'll take pitches. He'll put himself in a hole and Matt Trubel wrote a great piece at BP at the beginning of the year talking about how important first pitch strikes were and for hitters to attack on the first pitch these days, because if they fall behind, it's the league-wide numbers are really bad when a hitter is behind in the count. And the question is, you know, some guys are exceptions to that, certainly. The question you always have to ask yourself is the guy that I like or the guy on my team, like, is he actually an exception or is he most likely going to tend towards what the league does? And if Biggio is taking so many pitches and falls behind in the count, you know, he gets out of a lot of them by taking walks, but it makes the hitting profile harder to believe in, for me anyway, going forward in a strong way. And I don't think he's we have DRC plus as our metric. He's at 83 right now. Again, it's early. We provide a standard deviation on that, so people know that, you know, there's some modulation there. It's 20 right now. It's pretty big. So he could be in some instances an above average hitter right now. It's just that it's very noisy. And we try and give people that information. But, you know, the last 2 years, he was 112 and 107. That's a solid player. And that's a testament to what he actually did. But my concern was always about like how it works going forward. Like what does that profile actually look like when the league adjusts? And to your point about, you know, signal versus noise, we're talking about 695 plate appearances over that two season span, I should say. And it's not his fault. It was a short season last year, but 695 plate appearances or so, that's a regular season. That's one season of data. And as much as one season of data does give us plenty of signal, it can also be misleading. Everyone knows a number of guys who have had great years and never been quite the same. For Biggio, it looked like two seasons, but it's kind of the equivalent to one.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It'll be really telling to see how again, because I think because of that fragmented nature where, you know, we talked a little bit about April, and it's kind of an old baseball truism, right? You never believe anything you see in April and September. It was like 2020 was all April and all September.
Right.
And even though the Blue Jays were, you know, a playoff team, not that suggests also when you watch the way that the Rays really attacked him in that very short playoff series where same thing, attack. And I guess, you know, you talk about three true outcomes. They used to call those guys take and rake, right?
Yeah.
They were the take and rake guys. But if you don't have the rake, there's only so much value you can get out of the take. And it's, you know, I am not a big believer in Kevin Biggio either. I feel like I try to qualify that and like dance around it sometimes and be like, well, you never know. And I do want to give him credit for having like the track record that he's had, but it gets harder, especially in the advent of the publication of like StatCast metrics, where it's like where you see where he ranks in terms of the ability to hit the ball hard and the ability to square it up and the ability to do a lot of different things. It feels just like there are a lot of things working against him, which shouldn't mean that it's going to limit him as a big leaguer. But for me, those are the kind of inputs that I'm using when I'm like, oh boy, it would be nice to upgrade on whatever it is that he does.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's tricky because I spent a number of years as the minor league editor at BP. And we talk obviously a lot about projecting guys and not from a statistical sense purely, but their physical projection, their profile projection, that type of thing. And I think a thing that's unsaid a lot of times when we're talking about Kevin Biggio right now is that, like, if he remains this player, this particular profile, if he remains someone who slugs 430. Now, we've seen a number of guys in recent years, Max Muncy, Chris Taylor, other Dodgers, you know, whoever, but go back to Justin Turner and the Marlon Byrd school of like overhauling their swings, catching the ball out front, lifting, pulling. I mean, Robbie Grossman did this last year, and he's off to a rough start in Detroit. But like, I was a big believer in what he was doing because it fit this profile of how guys have successfully changed. He suddenly put the ball in the air 50% of the time. He pulled the ball more than he ever had in his life. And it's this guy who always had a tweener profile ever since he made the majors, a walk first profile without the power to substantiate it, right? Which is why he was always a fourth outfielder, a good fourth outfielder, but never a good regular, all of a sudden become a really valuable cog for Oakland. So I buy all of that. If Kevin Biggio starts doing these things, I think it's stupid if I don't change my prior judgment, right? Like, mm-hmm, we have to respond to that type of thing. So the thing when I say I'm not a believer in Biggio right now, the unsaid thing at the end of that is, you know, if he remains the same player. And I suppose that's like a little bit of a tautological statement, right? Like, if he's different, then he'd be different. but I hope it makes sense to people that, like, if he remains passive, if he remains the guy who produces the exit velocities that he does right now, right? Like what you're saying about the StatCast info, if he can't force pitchers to punish him if he can't punish pitchers, when they come in the zone, then this is who he's going to be. And it's going to be, you know, maybe he's league average in some years due to the walk rate, but I think it's going to be somewhere between league average and 10% worse than that. Personally, that's kind of where I'd peg him. But as I said about the league reacting to these guys the second time around, they can react to the league. And we've seen a number of guys do it. So I don't want people to say, like, this is definitive, this is who he is forever. He can change too. But based on what we see right now, that's not how it is. And I know I'm rambling, but the reason I brought up the minor league editor portion of this is that there are times people say, I think he can become this guy. He's not showing that yet, but I think he can become this guy. And that's different, right? I'm a little doubtful that he can become the guy who pulls the ball and shows that type of a different type of power than he's showed us before. And if he does, I will both change my judgment and have been wrong. But you can also believe in him right now and say he's not that guy right now, but I think he will become that guy. And that, you know, that's a different perspective, obviously, that one can have, and I think can be viable while agreeing kind of on what he is at the moment.
I would say that if ever there was a guy who had that power to reinvent, I think it would be Kevin Biggio, truthfully, okay. Because he is not that I'm saying that he will, but
right.
He is really well known as a student of the game, mm-hmm. and I think that he has the athleticism as you see him playing. Now suddenly I'm like defending Kevin Biggio. What have you done to me? He really puts the work in. He really studies. He does whatever he can. He's trying to maximize what he can get out of himself. And I would say that his athleticism allows him to play right field, left field, second base, third base. So if you are looking for a guy who might be able to make the changes that are required to kind of sustain a big league career into, you know, the latter year, his latter arbitration years, and getting towards he can make some more money, maybe he's definitely not the worst guy to believe in, and especially because there are so many Blue Jays fans who do believe in him and do really want to see him succeed as a key peg of the next good Blue Jays team.
Well, and I want to be clear that you can be a 90 to 100 DRC plus, WRC plus, OPS plus, whatever you want to use, mm-hmm. So somewhere in the you know 10% or to league average range. You can be that guy. And if you can play multiple positions, if you are a good clubhouse presence, if you are, you know, there are any number of things that you can be a guy who's valuable and contributes to a major league team while still having that offensive profile. Mm-hmm. I you know, to be clear, like I don't watch Kevin Biggio every day. Mm-hmm. If you were going to tell me like he's got not only as a student in the game, but like based on his physicality or whatever, like he can fit that mold, like I would defer to that and say like, oh, okay, that's an interesting thing. But like just based on what I've seen, based on the numbers I've looked at, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be harder for him. What I would also say is that what I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at his batted ball profile. I see it was 26% in 2019, 38% in 2020. In the short amount of plate appearances he has right now, it's 42. This is ground ball percentage, 42% in 2021. This is a guy that, as we're talking about, seems like he needs to put the ball in the air to generate the power to justify kind of the rest of his profile. He's increasingly either gone away from that or been forced away from that. So that's where we need to see the adjustment in terms of his ability to lift the ball going forward. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it might also be that if he was a fringe average power guy, this change to the ball that they've instituted in 2021, that's kind of been part of the depressed offensive environment, might hurt him, you know, especially compared to someone, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He hits the ball too hard. But someone like Biggio, on the fringes, it might impact him more than some other guys.
Scraping the wrong side of the ball, maybe more in 2021 than in 2020.
Yeah.
One thing I would say about in terms of his profile as like the kind of good clubhouse guy, plays multiple positions. Something that I think bodes well for Kevin Biggio is he's friends with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which is like,
that's a good
which
spot is like, to as, be.
You can do a lot worse. And if Vladdy decides like, I want him around, he's going to be around.
He's going to be around.
And we haven't even talked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because, again, we want to talk about early season, signal, noise. I don't care how big a bucket of cold water, I don't think you're going to be able to throw anything on to what we've seen from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. here so far in 2021.
I have no interest in doing it.
No.
I mean, this is a little bit of what you said before, which was, you know, confirming our prior you know, our preconceived notions, whatever it is, you mm-hmm. know, what we talked about when we looked at Vladdy coming into the season is we want to see him lift the ball more. I mean, it's similar to what we're saying about Biggio, but like the power was there. The exit velocity was there. He's just hitting them either line drives or into the ground. Mm-hmm. He's not doing that as much this year. And it's no surprise that when he can lift the ball with the strength that he has, that it's going to go really far. And this is a guy, again, like I said, Giancarlo Stanton, but like Vladimir Guerrero, the change to the ball is not going to affect him. Like he hits the ball entirely too hard for this. And to your point earlier, which is like, should we pump the brakes a little bit? I think what we should do is check our priors and say like, okay, it's easy for me to buy into this because I've always believed this version of him was possible. Mm-hmm. And now I'm seeing it in front of me and I want to believe. But, you know, just do the same thing you would do to someone you're skeptical about. You know, if you're skeptical about Randall Grichuk or Kevin Biggio or whoever it might be, like, apply the same, you know, jaundiced eye, if you will, to Guerrero. But I think when you dig deep, you're going to find that the guy's a monster and he's going to remain a monster. And this is just kind of part of, you know, he just took a little bit of time. And again, less than a year of adjustment. It's spread out over more time. But kind of in terms of plate appearances, less than a year of adjustment to become the guy that we thought he was as a prospect.
Mm-hmm. And something also, you know, that we were talking about earlier, which is what's another input if we're talking about what is Vladimir Guerrero doing this on purpose? It's like, well, he overhauled his body. He looks like a different guy. He's allows his body to do different things. And right. if we don't know for sure, but if the shape he was in last year was encouraging or prohibiting him from hitting in the air, we can say, is there a chance that this is not? And then we're seeing more and more like, oh, okay, well, he's able to fire his hip and his hands are coming through way better. So it's like there are those dynamic changes, those things we can see with our eyes. And it's like, and when you add to the fact that this is a guy that hit everything in the world when he was 18 playing in AA and wherever else, and, you know, hitting 400 in AAA, it's like, oh, okay, all these pieces fit. There's not, none of this is like, I can't believe this is, I didn't know he had it in him. I don't think anybody's saying that watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in 2021.
Right. I mean, again, I think it can be one of those things where like the narrative can take hold in our minds, but it's everything you're saying. I mean, so he changed his body, right? Which means he can get to the inner half easier, right? It's not that he couldn't do it before. One of the main things Jeff Paternostro, our lead prospect writer, saw him a lot at New Hampshire in AA. And I mean, one of the things he always raved about was his plate coverage. I mean, he could just hit the ball hard anywhere it was hit. And I think we saw his ability to cover the plate before this breakout, right? Mm-hmm. We saw that ability, but it wasn't paired with lifting the ball, really. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I'm looking at his Statcast data. His launch angle went from 6.5 degrees in 2019 to 4.5 degrees in 2020 to 10.5 degrees this year. That's mm-hmm. that's a big jump, and there's room to grow there too. Like he can probably get it up into the 12 to 14 to, you know, I'm sure he could go high. You know, you don't want to be Jose Ramirez over 20 degrees or whatever all the time, but like, mm-hmm. you know, 10 and a half, it's obviously enough. You know, and you see like the barrel percentage jump, that's because he's getting the ball in the air more often. Mm-hmm. Like he was hitting the ball hard enough for barrels before, just at the wrong launch angle. And now he's hitting them more often in the right launch angle. And I think, you know, all those changes, again, when I said, like, going back to the contextual stuff, what do the reporters say? So obviously we can see with our eyes, he looks like a different guy, but mm-hmm. what are report, you know, again, what's the intention? Is he doing it on purpose? Is he trying to lift the ball more? And he is trying to lift the ball more. Okay. That's something I will then put more credence in than simply the number itself.
Again, no one's looking for any reason. There's no reason to throw cold water on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And you can dig all you want. I don't think you'll find it. I want to talk about, before we let you go, about the minor leagues this year. So the minor league season is kicking off. As you mentioned, you've covered the minor league beat, covered a lot of prospect stuff for many years at Baseball Prospectus. What do you make of the changes here that we're going to see or that are happening in minor league baseball? And what do you think, like, fans, you know, the kind of fans who would kind of tune in or kind of follow the minor leagues a little bit, what's the difference going to be like for them so far in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a tough year. Obviously, we didn't have minor league baseball at all last year. We saw, you know, 40 teams get cut from the minor league. They're disaffiliated, if you want to say. There was a map going around on Twitter recently. I saw it via JJ Cooper of Baseball America, but someone from I believe MILB.com created it. And it, you know, there's without the Pioneer League, which is it's its own independent league now. It's not part of minor league baseball. There's this huge swath in the middle of the country that basically the only game in town is the Salt Lake City Bees, the Angels AAA team. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's devastating. I think we've written about it. Allison McKay wrote about it early last year. We had what I thought was a tremendous series. I know I'm plugging my own stuff, but it's not even mine.
Absolutely it's shameless.
It's Baseball Prospectuses, but Roger Cormier, Davey Andrews, and a rotating group of artists did their own song, their own original art, and then original prose about each of the minor league teams that were cut. First, the ones that were on the chopping block, and then they went back and rounded up the ones that ended up getting cut that weren't reported originally. And then there was a great piece from Ben Clemens and Meg Rowley at Fangraphs on the areas and the way that the loss of these teams would impact how far people would have to go to get baseball. So I think in a very broad sense, it's really sad because this was people's access to baseball in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't know what it's, you know, I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I'm in DC. I go to the Nationals games a fair amount, the Orioles a little bit. I didn't have the Nationals growing up. I went to the Orioles a fair amount, but you know, it's expensive to go to a game now. And it's significantly more reasonable to go to any number of the minor league teams in the area. One of mine was Frederick, that was disaffiliated. Bowie is another, but it's a lot more reasonable to go. And it's an entry point for people to learn and see and access baseball and learn to love it, make it a part of their pastime. And that's just gone. For a ton of areas, especially in the middle of the country, in the kind of middle northwestish area, and it's honestly like I don't want to sound too dramatic, but it is kind of devastating to me because I think people need to experience the game to love it the way that you and I have, and I think you know limiting access to that for. You know, it's a lot of money in one respect for the people who run the sport and people who run these franchises. It's not that much money. And and that to me is the first thing that comes to mind when we're talking about kind of the changes to the game. So I know I just talked a lot. So
No, you make a good point. And I think about the ability to forge connection to say a player, right? Well, you know, if with the Pioneer League as an example, being disaffiliated and becoming an independent league, and there are you know lots of high quality wood bat independent leagues that are all across both Canada and the United States. But I feel like when the guy that's on like that big league track kind of comes in and makes a stop, and there can be that connection. That if from a young fan who might always remember that, you know, for example, Blue Jays catcher Danny Jansen, right? He was, I believe, a ball boy for Adam Jones when Adam Jones was on his way up through. And like, if we don't know, but if that was the kind of thing that helped to spark a love of baseball in Danny Jansen, having Adam Jones in town and then watching him go and become a star in the big leagues, it's really difficult to replicate that. In you know, while the wholesomeness and the kind of quality of entertainment that you might get from a whichever some other you know non-affiliated league, but to see it in your hometown and then see it on TV, see it on the biggest stage, I think there's a lot of power in that, and it's a shame that those 40 different locations are going to be missing out on that.
Yeah, and just my personal story on that is I went to a Bowie Bay Sox game for, I don't even remember what number birthday, maybe my eighth birthday, ninth birthday, something like that. And I saw a visiting player hit two home runs, including one completely out of the park. It was Vladimir Guerrero. And look, I will never forget that. I was he hit two home runs as a visiting player. I mean, like that is imprinted on my mind. And, you know, it's just, to your point, and I feel like I'm talking about like they're utterly gone. You're right. It's only affiliated ball that's gone because there are independent leagues and the Pioneer League still exists. It's just doing so as an independent league. But I guess the shame of it to me is that MLB isn't backing it, right? MLB baseball in America and Canada should be in the business of supporting this type of thing, even at a loss, you know, we call it a loss leader. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what, you know, what they're bringing in and the profits that they're seeing. So, you know, to see it happen in the name of efficiency instead of, you know, I think it would be, you know, and I hope I'm wrong about kind of the desolation of baseball in that area, and that people are still going out and creating this forging this connection with the sport and creating lifelong memories and interest. But I think it's a damn shame that they're not, like, that the league isn't interested in fronting that, you know what I mean? And being, mm-hmm. being part of that connection. So I hope it still happens. But I think the league should be behind it. You know what I mean? As to the rest of minor league baseball, I mean, they're doing a ton of just wild stuff that, you know, they're implementing different rules across these various levels. And I don't have the exact breakdown in front of me, but I think it's going to be very hard to, you know, as an analyst to create signal out of the different noise at each level. And then also, like, they reorganized a bunch of leagues, and they took away the traditional names, which makes it really hard to for me at least, to keep track. Cause it's like, you've got the Southeastern League, and then there's also an Eastern, you know, there's the Eastern League, and there's the North Southeastern League, North Division in the Southeastern League, and South Division in the Southeast. It's like, it's too much for me to keep track of. I'm going to need like the sheet in front of me to keep track of it all year. But the various rule changes, I think, are going to be really interesting. I think in our corner of the internet, there's been a lot of negative reaction to them testing these rules out on these guys, because mm-hmm. it's not something these players can really agree to. And I think that's a fair point. I do also think, like, these rules should be tested out in a less competitive environment than the major leagues. They're also doing some testing in the Atlantic League, obviously. So I kind of think, like, yeah, the minors are not the worst place for this. Do I wish there was a little bit more consent on the player's part? I do. But I think it makes sense to see these things, and the fact that they're doing different rules at different levels might impact development. But my kind of reaction to it is that it's more likely but the benefit of it is that what they did in the Atlantic League a couple of years ago was, like, they tested a bunch of rules at once, and you kind of have no idea which one
right.
causes the thing that you're looking for and which one doesn't. And this way we get a little bit more of a sense of that. And I kind of think that's not an unreasonable approach.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors. I just hope that they don't throw the idea of two teams playing a game on a given day to see which team can win out the window completely. Yeah. And whether or not they go too far with the living lab tech concept, yeah, as opposed to the kind of, I don't want to say the word proving ground, but, you know, when we're recording this here on Wednesday, John Means threw a no-hitter today. John Means is an 11th round pick. You know, we've talked about some, you know, other guys like that, where if it just becomes that these are just sort of like completely stopping points for the bonus babies to just sort of bounce their way through with the bulk of their player development done at these centers, where they're again, they've got their Rapsodo, they've got their exit velocity, they're doing super slow-mo, all this sort of science stuff is happening on these bonus babies, while the rest of the guys are somehow less than cannon fodder. Like, they're just living lab rats running around trying to see if a pitch clock will improve the quality of the game. So, because I do think that there's value in that, seeing the value in the way that players can go out and drag their ass out there every single day. You know, I'm not advocating for them, you know, these cross country bus rides and things like that, but it's a grind, right? The minor leagues, yeah, are a grind because the big leagues are a grind. The big leagues are a different kind of grind, but I think it's worthwhile kind of seeing what guys are made of, and seeing when someone's like, I'm trying to get this guy out, not just because it's in my best interest as a prospect, but it's like, because we're trying to win. I'm trying to get this guy out. We want to get back in the dugout and win this ball game. I think, call me old fashioned, I'm a dinosaur, but I think there's value in that.
No, I do have a lot of concerns that teams are more interested in not even using the leagues themselves as a lab, but like you said, just putting these guys in a pitching lab or a hitting lab and tweaking them until it looks, you know, it looks right. And then kind of saying like, okay, go out there and do it a little bit and then we'll get you to the majors, whatever it might be. I mean, you mentioned John Means being an 11th round pick, a guy who's hurt right now for the Dodgers, but had been making quite a splash with Zach McKinstry. He's a 33rd rounder. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, I don't want, you know, the 33rd round doesn't even exist anymore. You know, we had a 5-round draft last year, which was, I absolutely hated. It's 20 this year, which was the least it could be based on the agreement that the league and the Players Association struck. I love those stories and I love that those guys got those chances. And this all ties back to the loss of the 40 teams, right? Like those are fewer roster spots for these guys to get a chance to prove themselves in. And look, I hope that those guys get access to the labs and all the equipment that the bonus babies do too. But like you said, like I think, you know, it's funny because I think as stats oriented people, we get labels thrown at us about, you know, like not caring about certain aspects of things. Like I 100% think that there's a tremendous amount of value in competition, in just in going out, like you said, and the one team playing another and trying to win. Now there's what I loved about the minors and what drew me to it was that it was this interesting mix of development and competition. You know, there are teams, and they're not silly for doing it, who place a lot of value on having winning minor league organizations that they're really proud when their AA team wins the title.
The Astros famously did that, you know, while with some other stuff, but that was a big part of their culture as well.
Right. And that's the funny part to me is like, so many people say like, well, you know, they're cold blooded and all they care about is like the nerdy aspects of things and the technical aspects. And that, look, there are parts of that are 100% true. Right. So like I get why they get that reputation. But like you said, like it was really important to them to have winning organizations and for these guys to experience winning. And if you've ever taken a management course or one worth its salt, which I have an MBA like an idiot, but like the good courses, in my opinion, will tell you that like the environment people come to work in is tremendously important. And that winning environment to experience winning and then to, you know, to make sure they're hungry for more and know what the difference is between a winning environment and a losing environment. If you've only experienced the losing, and this is what I hate about what the Astros did at the major league level, what I hate about these tanking jobs and teardowns and things like that, is that it creates this run of time, 3 to 5 to however many more years, that the people in the organization just show up knowing that they don't even have a shot. That they don't, you know, to me, like, how do you get motivated to do your job when that's when the job is not succeeding? I mean, I would struggle with that tremendously. And it's why I admire organizations like Kansas City. I mean, do I think they're going to win the division this year? No, I don't think this is real, but they also never really tank. They've been bad. Don't get me wrong, but they also, they do things that if I worked there, I would say like, well, at least we're fielding, you know, they signed Carlos Santana. What, you know, there's a train of thought, and a lot of smart people would sit there and say, and they're not always wrong, say, why would Kansas City Royals, 70 to 80 win team, something in that range, sign Carlos Santana for like real money? What are they, like, okay, so they're going to win. Okay, what is a great season? They win 83 games. What does that get them? Well, it gets the people on the team to not hate coming to work every day.
Yeah.
And those people are going to be on the team next year, right? And that's part of your culture. That's part of your environment. And I'm rambling and I apologize, but like,
don't apologize.
I couldn't agree more with the point that I also hope that, because it's, to me, it's crucial to developing these guys as competitors, as people who have to go out and win baseball games eventually.
I You used the Royals as an example. And the one I had in my mind was Detroit. You spoke about Robbie Grossman already. And last year it was, what's his name? Jonathan Scope. So I, in some ways I credit the Tigers for doing that. But at the other time, the other side, I had a conversation with a friend who is not in the same worlds that we're in, but he was asking about Casey Mize. And I was like, I kind of wish that he was in another organization in a way that like had a better track record of developing pitchers in the last decade, because it's like, while I credit the Tigers for building a winning environment and having such a competitive team for a long time, the other side of that is like, is Casey Mize getting what he needs to like if he was on if the Dodgers had Casey Mize in their system, what would he look like right now as an example?
Yeah.
And not, maybe that's not fair, but credit to the, like you said, credit to the Royals for, well, I, if you've listened to this show before, those are words that have never been said ever. But
no, look, they're not always good, right? Like they're not good, but they've done a number of things. And look, some of this is off the field, but you know, you go back to last year when the minor leagues were suspended, they didn't cut any of their minor leaguers, like even minor league free agents. That was there was a period, there was like a Friday, I think it was, that seemingly every single minor league free agent was cut. These guys that had signed as free agents or were going to reach free agency the next year. So teams said, look, this is a loss. We're not going to pay them this year. They're going to get the time. They're going to be free agents. Why would we pay them their stipend? Not even that much money, $400 a month or something like that, or maybe a week, but you know, why would we pay them that? That's just pouring money into a loss. Mm-hmm. But the Royals kept everyone on board. And then after the 5-round draft, they signed some of the best undrafted free agents, guys who people thought should have gone in the 5-round draft, because everyone was limited to the same. They could only offer up to $20,000 after the draft to undrafted free agents. That's all any team could offer. Okay, so if everyone's offering you the same amount of money and you're an undrafted free agent, do you want to go to the org that just showed some humanity and kept people, you know, on payroll, paying a stipend? It's not even that much money, but paying them a stipend the rest of the year. Or do you want to go to a team that said, the second you're not immediately, or the second that you're not able to contribute to our future, for sure, because they could re-sign some of these guys, of course, but like, you know, the second that you're of no more use to us, you're out the door. It makes it an easy choice for me. And I'm sure it made it an easy choice for a lot of these prospects. And, you know, again, like those are things, and, you know, those are ways to impact the environment, both in the minors and the majors, and in environments absolutely, you know, without question impact guys' development. And that's true in my workplace as it is in yours, as it is into anyone who's listening to this. So, you know, I think it's, again, I think it's absolutely crucial that competition remain at the heart, even if it's not everything in, you know, in the minor leagues. And while I do think it's reasonable, again, to test these things out, I couldn't agree more that I hope that doesn't get taken too far.
We've taken this too far. I've taken too much of your time, number one. Number two, you have awoken feelings of affinity towards the Kansas City Royals in me and probably other people listening to this, which we absolutely cannot allow. We will say that, speaking of stipend, the Blue Jays were, of course, very early in increasing the stipend that they offered that they paid to their
minor leaguers. They were one of the first.
Same sort of thing. They wanted to be, they want to run a good organization. They, you know, that's something that Mark Shapiro, whose track record, may not support these strokes of humanity in terms of like the way that his organizations have been operated. But I think, just like we talked about at the beginning, there's lots of opportunity for people to grow, for people to learn, people to really try to make sure that they're doing the right thing. If you're a Blue Jays fan, I think that there's nothing wrong with hoping that Kevin Biggio is able to become a viable big leaguer for the next few years. And there's also nothing wrong with thinking that maybe Mark Shapiro and the Blue Jays front office is front office are not bloodless ghouls who are just trying to count every penny. That said, you know, you can never hurt yourself by erring on the side of caution when it comes to that piece.
I'll take a win, and if they don't mention the years of control coming back when they trade someone away, if they just stop doing that, I'll be happy.
It's such an easy thing. Just be like, we like this player. We like what he can do.
Right.
We think he's got a lot of potential. That's all you got to say. Just say we like his bat. We like his arm. He's got a great curveball. Throw some spin rate shit at us. We don't care. Oh, yeah, he's got a crazy spin rate on his fastball. Craig, thank you so much. This has been amazing. Before I let you go, you can throw a plug in for anything that you want in the whole world.
Sure. The website that I run with a great group of writers and people, baseballprospectus.com. An annual subscription is, I think, $46, $45.95. It's less than $4 a month. And you're going to read some of the smartest people out there. It's really a ton of good stuff. There's humor, there's analysis, there's prospect coverage. We're really excited to get our prospect team. We have people across the country out into stadiums as safely as possible this year and get prospect reports. So like I said, Jeff Paternoster, our lead prospect writer, sees plenty of Blue Jays prospects at the AA level because he's in Hartford. So they come through there a fair amount. I earnestly think it's a great use of, like I said, less than $4 a month. And I appreciate you having me on. I've had an absolute blast.
Craig Goldstein of Baseball Prospectus, thank you so much for giving us the time.
My pleasure.
All right, thanks so much to Craig for taking the time. I thought that was a great chat. I had a lot of fun talking with Craig. He's a really smart, passionate guy, and that was great. And as I said, I've been doing this for a long time, and for whatever reason, our podcast paths never crossed, but now we have, and I'm glad for it. And if you love good baseball writing, Baseball Prospectus has been doing it for a very long time. And if you want to go and check everything out that they have to offer, including a lot of their proprietary stats, the catcher's defense metrics, that they are at the front of the ahead of the class for pioneering defensive metrics and measuring runs above average for catchers, valuing framing, pop times, scoops, all that sort of stuff. Baseball Prospectus is one of the leaders in our industry. If I'm in the baseball industry, which might be a little bit much, but go to BP, go to Baseball Prospectus, check them out. Craig gave you the sales pitch. I don't need to re-up on it again. But as I said also, and if you're in the subscribing mood, then I got to tell you, yeah, theathletic.com/spinrate. Sign up. But until such time, we want to say thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you for sticking with and for checking out Spinrate here in the early days of 2021, getting into May, getting into the real stuff now. The weather's getting better. Baseball is getting real. April is over. April's full of baloney. May is when the real... what's the word? What do they say? The rubber hits the road. That's what I'm looking for. So if you want to check us out, Caitlin and I will be back. You'll hear us on Monday. But until then, my name is Drew Fairservice. I want to say thank you for listening to Spinrate.